right, welcome back to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Now switching our focus over to the energy sector, chatting with Dan Steffens. Dan is the president of the Energy Prospectus Group. We're going to talk nat gas pricing continues to remain strong. Oil can't really seem to get back above that $70 a barrel level. And some of the stocks that Dan thinks can especially take advantage of this higher natural gas price. So, Dan, let's start off with natural gas pricing. It's doing very well. It's holding over $4. Quite frankly, we hear so much about how weather impacts the natural gas price. But one thing we chat a lot with you about are inventories, storage, what we're seeing in the market. And we've been hearing from you pretty consistently that storage of natural gas has been relatively low. Let's start there. Dan, what are we seeing on the more fundamental side in terms of what's available to the U.S. here? Inventory levels, please.
Well, the fact that gas is holding above four, I mean, there is currently, as of today and as of the second quarter of this year, once we get into the spring, demand for natural gas for space heating goes down. So this is when you're going to have the lowest prices. And it's before gas demand for power generation really ramps up in the South for electricity generation. So this is when you should have the lowest gas prices of the year. So, but, you know, refilling storage is not an option. So we've had a much, much colder, you know, January and February than we had the last two winters. That has drained U.S. storage below the five-year average. It's more than 10% below the five-year average. As of last week's report, I think this was as of March 10th. Maybe March 7th even. As of March 7th, there was 230 BCF below average. I know that's just a number, but that's a big deal. But the inventories were 628 BCF below where they were last year. So when we entered and when we ended the last winter, we had over 600, and I think it was more, really close to 700 BCF below the five-year average at the end of the winter. And so we were already, you know, halfway full before. So it was really easy to refill storage. Well, this year, if you're 230 BCF below, that's almost a trillion cubic foot difference year over year. And refilling U.S. storage before the next winter arrives is not optional. It has to be done. The utilities that bring natural gas to our homes and businesses in the large cities around the United States are required by law to have an amount of gas in storage to meet demand for a cold winter. Okay, so they will pay any price to refill that. So, and also these big LNG exporters along the Gulf Coast, they have contractual obligations to meet the demand of the people that helped build their big facilities. So this situation, and it wasn't this severe in August of 2022. If you pull up a natural gas chart, you'll see that gas spikes to over $9.30 per MMBTU in August of 2022. And it was not as tight. The market was not as tight as it is today. So I think when we get in halfway through the summer, halfway through the third quarter, and it looks like we're not going to be able to refill storage, you will get a bidding war between the LNG exporters and the utilities that bring gas to our homes in the market, and they will pay whatever it takes to get that gas supply.
Well, Dan, let's talk a little bit more about these LNG terminals. We've talked about it in the past, but we're getting closer to where some of these other new designs are coming online in the U.S. and even the first one in Canada. And then there's also the added component to the LNG demand side of more power centers as coal power is replaced, and also as AI data centers look to get transition power. Maybe they're going towards nuclear, but those are still 5-10 years away. So in the interim, nat gas is going to be the electrical power hub growth in the U.S. and abroad. How does that all factor into the demand side?
Yeah, I mean, I saw an article the other day that said at ERCOT, which is the outfit that controls our electric power grid down here, they were saying they don't think they can shut down. There was three or four coal-fired power plants that were supposed to be shut down this year, and they don't think they can do it. They don't think they can do it and meet electricity demand. You know, they're building some of these AI data centers in Texas. Anyway, so it's a big deal. But on the LNG export facility, there's two things that combined that we have 5 billion cubic foot per day more demand for gas because of the LNG export facilities. So three new facilities came online in 2024, in the second half of 2024, that added 3.3 billion cubic feet per day of additional export capacity. And those, the last two of those facilities, Plaquemines and Train 3 down to Corpus Christi, are just now ramping up to their design capacity. So we're not even there yet. And every week we're seeing new records set for LNG exports out of the U.S. Then also Freeport, a 2 BCF a day facility, was offline for almost from like November of 23 through, you know, June or something. It was like offline for 8 or 9 months because of a fire. They had a fire, it shut down the whole thing. And then even when they said they were ready to bring it back online, the government, you know, had to have all these inspections and all this stuff before they could ramp it up. So now it's fully back online, and that's another 2 BCF a day. There's an Exxon facility, is called Golden Pass. And that actually completion of that facility has taken longer because they don't have enough workers, because the workers that do all the welding and everything on the new facilities at Plaquemines and Corpus Christi, there weren't enough other ones to finish their deal. So Golden Pass train number one is supposed to add 700 MCF per day of gas in the fourth quarter of this year. And then train two and three is going to be completed in 2026. But anyway, so by the fourth quarter of 2025, the U.S. will have 22 BCF per day of LNG export facility, when it just had like 14.5 BCF per day, back in 2023. So it's really ramped up quickly. And then Trump's team is going to fast track the approval of several more LNG export facilities that should all be online by the end of 2028. So we're going from 14 BCF a day to 33 BCF a day of export capacity. So just that alone, and then, you know, you add that with the weather situation we had this winter, and you've got a very, very tight U.S. natural gas market in the second half of this year and through all the way through 2026. The other thing is, you know, a lot of people hear about these AI data centers. Well, really, of the stuff we've talked about, that's the smallest impact. But I get a lot of calls about, oh, aren't they going to need all this electricity? And that is true. They're going to need a lot of electricity. And the only near-term solution is to build natural gas-fired power plants that are dedicated to the individual AI data centers. And a lot of those are under construction right now. I follow a company that is building them for some of them. And it's a pretty big deal.
I am so interested to see how these data centers get powered. And it does seem like a lot of it will be natural gas, at least early on. But Dan, regarding this export capacity, look, it is going to explode, as you outlined, over the next about 5 years. Now, from my understanding, this is important because outside of the U.S., it seems like everybody, especially in Europe, pay a lot more for their natural gas. So that would entice the U.S. producers to export their capacity. Can you break down the pricing model, though, of how this will work? How much cost does it add to these producers to get their products overseas? And have we seen this in history before, where export capacity grows and does it have to correlate to higher prices?
Yeah, well, okay, it takes about $2.50 per MMBTU to freeze the gas, basically not freeze it all the way, but liquefy it. You have to get it to about 250 degrees Fahrenheit below zero, which I frankly don't know how in the hell they do that, but they do. But then, and then that includes the transportation cost to get it to Europe. So maybe you can get it to Europe for 250 and takes you $3 to get it to Asia. But the Europe and Asia gas prices today are $13 or $14. So you take $4, say you add $3 of additional cost, you got $7. The profit margin is 50%. So the profit margin is $7, $7, $8 sometime on this gas. And then, you know, natural gas prices in Europe and Asia went into like hyperspace a few years ago when the Russian thing cut off their gas supply. And it was, you know, they were paying $20, $30 an MMBTU for gas. So the profit margin is gigantic. Now, who gets that profit is split between the producers themselves. They get higher gas prices because they increase the demand. but also a lot of times it depends on where the title to the gas shifts. And a lot of it actually goes to the companies that own the ships that transport it. So there's a lot of profit there for them. But, you know, the whole food chain of getting that LNG, you know, to the big markets in Asia and Europe is sharing some very big numbers. And, you know, I think there's no end in sight. Maybe at some point, you know, we overbuild all this LNG export capacity and the price comes down, but it's still going to be profitable. They're not going to shut down. But let's say the natural gas price in the U.S. has to get so high that it makes the LNG exporters not export that gas. Well, that number is going to be like $9 or $10 an MMBTU. And that's why in August of 2022, we saw the gas price spike to over $9, because that price was needed to slow down LNG export facilities so we had enough gas and in the third quarter to refill our storage before the next winter happened. It's all about refilling storage before the next winter arrives.
Well, Dan, in lieu of all this export capacity that the U.S. has, and again, Canada's going to get started as well, and because natural gas is so regionally priced, I mean, even in this country, in the U.S., there's different pockets of what nat gas prices go for, but when you look globally, it's a big dispersion of pricing. Do you think this normalizes the nat gas pricing environment on a global scene a little bit more than we've seen in history, because eventually Europe and Asia's prices will come down as the U.S. and Canada and North American supplies go up? Will this normalize nat gas pricing?
Yeah, but if it normalizes them, it's going to be like $5 or $6 in MCF. It's going to be an extremely profitable price for our upstream companies. Now, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's regional. It's even sub-regional within the U.S. I mean, even during those winters that were warm, the previous two winters that were warm in the eastern United States, natural gas in the western market, the market, you know, supplying, you know, the West Coast, big West Coast cities and Salt Lake City and all that, those gas prices stayed at $8 or $9 an MMBTU during those winters because they were running short. And that really helped the Canadian, you know, gas producers that could get their gas down into the pipes that service the western U.S. So it's even sub-regional. When I was at Hess, we actually sold our gas into the New York market at $60 an MMBTU for a few months in a really cold winter, you know, 25 years ago. So gas prices have been very high. And when you look at it on an energy content, where could the gas price go? And this is why gas prices are so much higher in U.S. and Asia. In those markets, gas is priced based on its energy content. So it takes 6 MMBTU of natural gas to equal the energy that's in one barrel of oil. So if the price of oil is $60, the natural gas price should be $10, 1/6 that price. But now you subtract transportation and all the other stuff in it. I think the upside for U.S. natural gas and eventually Canadian natural gas is 1/10 to 1/12 the price of oil. So just tell me but let's say oil goes to $70 in the U.S. I could see the natural gas price being in the $6 to $7 range if it's priced on energy content. And I actually went to a conference and there was guys from API talking about, you know, when the LNG ramps up, because if we do, we're, and think about it, when we get to, U.S. gets to 33 BCF per day of export capacity, man, that's a big chunk of our gas now. So the global oil gas price will set the domestic price. It'll be lower domestically, but it'll still go toward the global price of gas, less transportation and processing to get it there. So I think 1/10 to 1/12 the price of oil is a reasonable where, but that'll probably happen in like 2028 or 2030. So who knows, but I can tell you it's a lot higher than where gas has been trading for the last couple of years. And all of our upstream companies that I follow, if you just put $4 gas in their future price forecast or their income forecast, it's incredible how much more profitable these companies are. Because the lifting costs, their processing and lifting costs for a lot of the big ones is only like $1, $1.25. They have huge profit margins at $4 gas.
Okay, Dan, let's get into the stocks then, because look, if the outlook for natural gas pricing is that strong, it does seem like it'll bring up costs for the US citizen, but let's just talk pricing here and the stocks. Last year, natural gas didn't really get above $3 until Q4. It briefly touched there in May and June, but in 2025, nat gas, from what I'm seeing, hasn't gotten below $3. So totally different pricing environment. Have the stocks reacted the way you would expect?
Yeah, I was using $3 gas when I first started doing my 2025 forecast, you know, at the end of 2024. I was assuming we'd be at like $3 gas in the first quarter, it'd go to like 275 and then ramp up to three in the third quarter and maybe 350 in the fourth quarter. So it's way above where I started. I have just twice raised the gas price that I'm using in all my forecast models. And right now I'm using, you know, 350 for the first quarter, and it looks like the price is going to exceed that. I'm using 375 for the second quarter, and right now all the futures contracts for the second quarter are above four. So that, and I'm 425 in the third quarter and 450 in the fourth quarter. And then I'm still using $4 gas for all of 2026, but I could definitely see a scenario where it goes above $5. But I can tell you again, if it's $4, these gas companies, the big gas producers, are going to make a lot of money in the next, you know, year and a half for sure.
Well, Dan, you've mentioned it's really crucial for investors to dig into the energy companies in their portfolios or on their watch lists and look at the energy mix, like how much of it is oil, how much of it's natural gas liquids, and how much of it's actually dry natural gas. Maybe speak to how you're looking at companies, and do you like a heavier weighting to natural gas right now in the mix just because of the pricing differential between nat gas and oil?
Yeah, like right now when our members call me and they, oh, if you could only buy a couple stocks, what would they be? And I said, well, I'm very bullish on natural gas, so I'd just be buying the big natural gas producers. And it's like all of our Sweet 16, which is my top picks, they all produce a lot of natural gas. All 16 companies, I think the lowest amount of net, if you add natural gas and natural gas liquids and, you know, price it on an energy content, or, you know, it looks like the lowest amount of production is 30%. I mean, it's probably of the 16 companies, eight of them are over 50% of their production on a energy content level is natural gas and NGLs. And then there are several that are, you know, it's way up there. Like EQT is like 99% natural gas and natural gas liquids.
So Dan, back to my question then, have we seen these natural gas stocks react? I see some of them are doing well, but have they been providing that torque to the underlying price? And where do you look to? What stocks do you like?
Yeah, and they've come up. I mean, you know, we're not the only people that see this. I mean, this is why if you look at the futures market right now, just, you know, just Google natural gas futures on the NYMEX deal, and you'll see that the futures prices for December and January, December 25 and January 2026, are already above $5. So they can lock in that price right now just by going to the futures market. So, and it's also extremely important to know where the company's gas comes from. The Permian Basin, or, oh, I want all these Permian Basin, but the Permian Basin is an oil basin. The wells out there are drilled for oil. And the producers out there, for them, natural gas is just a byproduct that they have to get rid of. And because there's not enough pipeline takeaway capacity to West Texas and Southeast New Mexico, they get very low gas prices. Like, I mean, they're only getting $1.50 for their gas. So it doesn't matter how much they produce. If they can't get it to a pipeline, that can't get a different price. They have some of them, actually some of the smaller companies have to pay people to take their gas because they don't have good marketing people. But so the four companies that I really like, my top picks, and they are all producers in Appalachia. By Appalachia, I mean the Marcellus and Utica shales where they're getting most of their gas. And it's the biggest state is Pennsylvania. So Western and Northern Pennsylvania is a lot of gas. Ohio and West Virginia is where they're getting their production come. And those four companies in our Sweet 16 are Antero Resources. And they have a fantastic marketing company, and they can sell about 70% of their gas today is being sold into an area in the Louisiana Gulf Coast called Tier 1 that actually pays premium prices. So they get about 30 cents an MMBTU higher for their gas than the Henry Hub gas price that you see in the news every day. And then I also like Range Resources, which is with a symbol RRC. Antero is AR. RRC, they were actually credited with discovery of how to do horizontal wells in the Marcellus Shale. And they hold about 1 million acres of really tier one leases. It's almost all of it's held by production, but they have literally thousands. I think they have about 3,000 development drilling locations that are extremely profitable at $3 gas. They've been profitable through this whole thing, and they've been able to maintain their dividends. Even when gas was $2, $2.50, they were able to maintain their dividends and be very cash flow positive during the last 2 years. So then the other one is EQT. Of course, EQT is the second largest gas producer. It's EQT Corp and symbol EQT. And it is the second largest producer of natural gas in the US. The largest is, I think it's Extra Energy or something. It's the merger of Chesapeake and Southwestern created a new company, and that merger made them the number one gas producer. But I don't recommend that one, mainly because it has so much Wall Street coverage, it's probably already priced fairly. But if you want to own number one, they're the one to own. And then the other one I like up there is Coterra. Now, Coterra production is about 30% oil, crude oil, and 70% NGLs, or NGLs and natural gas. It pays a nice dividend. I like it. The only company in our Sweet 16 that does not pay a dividend is AR, because they are more focused on, building reserves and getting more market share and everything. So they're doing well. Now, the other areas that can get gas to the Gulf Coast exporters and get premium pricing is the ones in the Eagle Ford in South Texas. They're closer to the Gulf Coast, and they have enough pipeline capacity. They have excess pipeline capacity, so they get good pricing for their gas. And the number one company I like down there, they are the third highest producer. The name of the company is Crescent Energy. It's CRGY. And I like it because it's kind of off the radar screen. It's smaller than the other companies, and it is going to report a big increase in production from the fourth quarter to the first quarter because of some acquisitions and mergers that they've just recently completed. And then now the Haynesville is really close. The thing is with the Haynesville, those are deeper wells. The Haynesville wells come on very strong. They pay out quickly. At $3 gas, they're very profitable wells. And Comstock Resources, I like CRK, except that it's owned by Jerry Jones controlled. He owns 85% of the stock, and it's controlled by Jerry Jones, and it gets a lot of publicity. So yeah, if you think gas is going to go to $8 or $9, it's going to make a ton of money. But I think if gas just stays in the 450 range or so, it's probably fairly priced already. So I like the other ones better. Let's just say that.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you breaking down a lot of the different gas companies that have your attention. And yeah, that Comstock does get a premium because of Jerry being involved. But thank you for outlining those companies for our listeners. Let's widen the scope of the conversation out, though, to talk about the impact of tariffs. It seems like that's all we hear about today is, which tariffs are going to stick, which ones are going to maybe be used as a bargaining chip. When it comes to the energy sector and the tariffs on Canada, it does seem like those are potential effectors of price in the near term. How are you looking at that? And let's widen the scope out beyond just nat gas, but also to include oil now.
Yeah, first of all, there's a lot of very high quality Western Canadian companies that are trading at deep discounts. I mean, I think the impact of the tariffs has already been more than fully priced into the stocks. And a couple of things to remember, again, knowing their production mix and knowing where they sell their production. Remember, the tariffs only impact what they sell into the US. So very few of them sell their natural gas directly into the US. Then almost none of their NGLs go into the US. So of the oil that goes into it, let's say it's the tariff stays at 10%, I'm discounting their revenues by like 5%. So it's not that big of a deal. And some of these stocks have been discounted 20, 30, 40%. I mean, they're really, really cheap, and they're still very profitable. At if WTI averages 65 and the Canadian gas price averages 250 Canadian, I'm talking Canadian dollars, you're still talking extremely profitable companies. I mean, I like Hemisphere Energy, and it sells, it produces almost no gas. The gas it produces, it just uses that to power their pumps out in the oil field. So their revenues are more than 99% oil related, and it's heavy oil, and U.S. needs that heavy oil. But because the Canadian dollar has gone down a little bit in value, I was talking to Don Simmons, the CEO, the other day. He goes, frankly, our oil price in Canadian dollars in the second half is probably going to be higher than what we expected. So it looks good. And I like these companies not just because of what they're doing right now. You know, Hemisphere's got a development going over in Western Saskatchewan that has the potential to triple the company's production. I mean, it's really a high potential deal. I like InPlay Oil. The reason I like InPlay is they just announced, and they will be closing in April, a truly transformative acquisition that is going to more than double their production and double or even triple their development drilling inventory. And they produce a lot of gas too. I would say their production is maybe 60, 65% oil and 30, 35, 40% natural gas and NGLs, which they are not going to be paying much of a tariff on. And that one looks really good. And the impact of that truly transformative acquisition, I've been following this company since it was formed, like 10 years. And I know the CEO and I know their team really well, and they're really excited about that deal. It's going to be a great deal for the company. And they pay a really nice dividend. And they're committed to keep paying their monthly dividends. So InPlay, I like Surge Energy because it pays monthly dividends. And, you know, their dividend yield is like 11, 12% based on the current share price.
All right. Dan, a lot of opportunities out there in the energy sector, especially if oil can rebound and get above 70, even make a run, even higher than that. The oil price has been the one thing, I think, holding back some of these companies. But again, natural gas, that has done well. We are still dealing with, broadly, a lot of, I guess, fear in these markets. So that can also hold back some of these equities.
Yeah, I'd just like to remind your listeners, if they send me an email to dmstephens@comcast.net, we just recently published updated profiles on Antero, Coterra, EQT, Range Resources, Crescent Energy. We just recently updated our profiles on those. So if they send me an email, I'll be happy to send them our recent profile on those companies.
All right, there you go. I'll post Dan's email in the show notes. You can also email Shad or myself directly. Again, Dan Stephens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Click the link in the show notes on our website and podcast and on YouTube to follow along with Dan and what they're covering over at the Energy Prospectus Group. Everyone, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. Again, please go back, like, subscribe, comment on our YouTube page, on our podcast. That helps get the word out there of this show and helps us stay up to date with all of you. Thank you all for tuning in on this weekend show. We'll be back with you throughout the rest of the week. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Cortland Economics Report is produced for A.B. Cortland and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Cortland, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Cortland Economics Report.